Community Conversations with Community Centres SA. Here's Kerry Ackermans.
We'll be talking today about autophagy and to Professor Tim Sargent, a biomedical scientist leading cutting-edge research into how our cells clean and repair themselves. That is the process of autophagy. Based at SAMRE in Adelaide, his work explores how this natural cellular recycling system affects ageing, brain health and diseases like dementia. He's passionate about turning fundamental science into real-world health solutions and is at the forefront of developing new ways to measure anti-aging processes in humans. Tim will share with us understanding how our cells stay healthy could unlock longer, healthier lives for all of us. I've been very interested in autophagy and have looked into it for some time now, and I'm really keen today to hear what Tim has to share with us. Well, welcome to the Community Conversations podcast, Tim. This is certainly a topic that's been a big discussion between my partner and myself. He locked onto this and has researched it also. Autophagy, which I now know how to say and how to practice it. But before we get into that, Tim, perhaps tell us a bit about the organisation SAMRE that backs you as the research facility.
Yeah, so it's great to be here with you today. So SAMRE is a wonderful place full of researchers that cover many different disciplines, from public health all the way down to cell biology, which is where I dwell. So that breadth of expertise allows collaborations that wouldn't otherwise happen. So I get to collaborate with wonderful nutrition scientists, for example, to further my research, or even computer scientists. And that doesn't happen in a lot of other places.
And I'm sure, Tim, that a lot of this research is linked, because if you work on one thing, such as cleaning your gut and your system, that's only going to help, potentially be a prevention.
Absolutely. So as a cell biologist, I can work with people who work in the Royal Adelaide Hospital, for example. So I can try to pull my research through to the clinic to have maximum impact.
Of course. Now let's get into the topic itself about biological aging. Everyone wants to know how you can not age, basically.
Yeah.
Now, we can't prevent the forever outcome. You know, death is that certainty.
Absolutely.
But we certainly like to stay as good as we can up until that point. And humans spend a lot of money and time on this. So talk to us about what we know about biological aging and how relevant it is to health in Australia.
Yeah, so I guess I can split that into two different areas of conversation. One is what we know can influence your risk of age-related diseases. So if you take a disease like dementia, for example, we already know that obesity in midlife, diseases like diabetes and heart disease, massively increase your risk of getting dementia later on. So anything you can do to negate those things can improve your brain health. So there's already a lot of research on that, which is encouraging, because it means that you can influence your risk of age-related disease later on. When we talk about biological aging, though, and we get into the realm of geroscience, this is where scientists are trying to understand what makes the human body age. So scientists have a consensus. We know of processes that contribute towards aging at the cellular level, and that's what we're interested in researching through the field of autophagy.
And where did this first arise? Where do people lock on to autophagy?
It's actually been known about for quite some time. So there was a Nobel Prize given to someone called Christian De Duve back in, I think, the 1950s or 60s, it escapes me which. He discovered a part of the cell called the lysosome, and that's like the stomach of your cell, or the recycling center of the cell that makes up the tissue of your body. He first described the process of autophagy when he saw evidence of cells cleaning waste from within themselves. So you'll see online a lot of people describing autophagy as the body clearing out cells. It's not quite that. What it is, it's the cells of your body cleaning up waste inside themselves. So this is at the subcellular level of your body.
One of the things I'm really interested in, Tim, is it's long been said, and perhaps it's only anecdotally, you would know more than I, is that if we take cancer, which is a disease that people, it's prevalent, and look at what they can do for prevention, and it's always this cells have gone rogue. It's like our body turning on ourselves. Do you see some links between this?
There's a lot of research on autophagy and cancer. That's actually quite a complicated field. So autophagy, in one sense, is a pro-survival mechanism. So, for example, animal studies have shown us that when you're starving, it's autophagy that helps you to survive starvation, because your body can harvest its own material to live. And in the same way, cancer can do that to help itself to survive, especially in the face of things like chemotherapeutics and the toxic agents that we use to try and treat cancer with. So autophagy is like a double-edged sword in that case, that you need it to survive, but also the cancer uses it to survive. So I know companies right now are trying to develop therapies for cancer to help other therapies that target the autophagy process, that inhibit autophagy in cancer, or stop the cancer from using autophagy to survive.
And that survival of cancer cells is quite common, isn't it, where they actually are feeding on your own body in order to survive.
Yeah, yeah.
So creating blood arteries.
Yes, cancer can employ a few different tricks to gain nutrition. One way they can do that is they can harvest material from your body. The scientific term is called pinocytosis. It's very similar to autophagy. So a cancer cell can reach out, grab a little bit of protein from outside of itself and pull it into the lysosome and recycle that protein for its own nutrition. So your cancer can exploit your body for nutrition.
So how close are we to using the science in everyday medicine?
Unfortunately, it is quite far away. So what we have now is lifestyle interventions that we know reduce the risk of age-related disease. But when you're talking about slowing biological aging and that field of geroscience, that's quite far away. Now, the reason for that is, while scientists know a lot about biological aging in what we call preclinical models, and what I mean by that is cells grown in the lab or even mouse models that we use in the lab, we don't know about how that works in human beings. And that's where my lab is trying to change the narrative. So we're trying to develop ways to measure these processes in human beings.
So can boosting autophagy really help us live healthier lives?
Based on what we know again from the lab, the results look promising. So we know if we take a model in the lab and inhibit autophagy, then biological aging speeds up. And we know if we take a model of a disease like heart disease or dementia and again slow down the autophagy process, we know that the disease speeds up. And likewise, if we enhance autophagy, we can slow the disease processes and slow biological aging. So the results from the lab are really promising. But what we have to do now is we have to understand what that looks like in humans. So if you go onto YouTube and type in how do I increase my autophagy, there's a ton of material out there. And there's videos with millions of views. Unfortunately, not a lot of that is backed up by science, and that's what we're trying to do now at SAMRI.
So is there any harm in people practicing autophagy?
I guess it depends on what you mean by autophagy. So the cellular process of autophagy, we don't know if that can be turned on yet with lifestyle practices. I'm guessing that you mean things like fasting. Depending, of course, on the circumstances, there are benefits to fasting, without a doubt. It can improve your glucose metabolism, decrease your risk of diabetes, for example. But we don't quite understand yet how to fast to boost the autophagy process inside of cells. That's what we're trying to understand through different experiments, even human experiments that we're running at SAMRI. I guess the good news as well is that there are also companies that are trying to develop drugs that can increase your autophagy too, to slow down biological aging.
Yes, it would be great if we could do it with natural processes, because I look at the drug Ozempic, which people have latched onto as a weight loss drug.
For sure.
But there are other ways to weight loss.
As we know,
besides getting to the point where you need a pill. So I'd love it if there wasn't a tablet attached to it necessarily.
Absolutely. So I guess the most promising work done so far, and this is far from perfect, but we've got indications from the literature that exercise can stimulate autophagy, and that from animal models, some kinds of fasting, like prolonged fasting, can stimulate autophagy. Now, we've yet to understand exactly what that looks like in a human being, but it doesn't come as any surprise, because exercise, for example, people who are fit in midlife have a reduced risk of dementia later in life. We know that neurological diseases have a heavy autophagy component. So we know that a lot of neurological diseases stem from the fact that the brain can't clean the waste material from their cells properly, and all of this builds up and can contribute to dementia. So we know things like exercise can reduce your risk. So it's not a stretch, given the data out there, to suspect that these sorts of lifestyle interventions can increase autophagy.
So isn't it interesting, Tim, that when you look at these as lifestyle choices, how you choose to live your life, they've always said, you know, eat well, exercise, get sleep.
That's right.
Don't stress. That's
correct.
Four. Is there another I should add to that?
No, if you're doing those things, you're winning. You're doing pretty well. What I see in the literature is exercise comes up time and time again as one of the best things you can do for yourself.
And even just walking, it doesn't have to be
for
anything
sure.
else.
Absolutely.
Tim, when we look at these sorts of, all the sort of research that you're doing, and it's just amazing what's in place, and it's a part of it. Do you often feel perhaps frustrated by the system that you can't do more, there isn't more money? What would you like to see?
Yeah. So I guess that's a huge question. There's a lot to unpack there. A lot of that comes to educating the public about what's happening in science in Australia, also how long science takes. So we saw approval of an Alzheimer's drug in Australia just the other day, which is great news. This drug can slow the decline.
That's wonderful news.
Absolutely, of Alzheimer's disease. I guess what's important for the public to know is that that took decades upon decades of research. So an Australian, Colin Masters, actually cloned the gene where the sticky substance comes from that accumulates in the brain. And that was many decades ago. And it's taken all that time and a huge amount of investment to get it to a place where it's in the clinic. So I think what people need to appreciate is that science needs to be invested in. And it can take 20 or 30 years to take something to the clinic.
And mistakes can be made. It's not a mistake, it's a trial. It's a way.
Sure.
It's, well, that didn't work, now we have to try this. And I think people do get frustrated that why isn't there a cure for cancer after all these years and all this money?
Mm.
But the rigour around protocols and applications for to be able to turn something into a drug is huge and can literally take years and years.
Absolutely.
For good reason.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, humans are really complex. So if we run a study in cells in the lab, it's extremely controlled. We know exactly how we're manipulating the cells. We know about their biochemistry. We know how to measure it really precisely. If we get a human being, you don't know if that human being exactly stuck to the nutritional protocol you set out. We don't know if they were on a bender the night before or if they're on doing other things or practices or lifestyle interventions.
Or their history. They might not have told you they smoked. Or
absolutely, absolutely. Mm. Or just genetic makeup. Mm. Humans vary greatly. Look at height. Look at eye color. Mm. These things vary hugely. So do biochemical processes and reactions to drugs.
So, Tim, can we talk about genetics then? There's often said with cancer it's genetically determined. What's your comment on that?
Like with a lot of complex diseases, and cancer's a lot of different things. So cancer's a really complicated example, but some cancers can be driven by genetic changes, which can drive proliferation of cells, for sure. But there's a big lifestyle component with that too. So if you look at Alzheimer's, it's a very similar situation. There are very genetically driven familial forms of dementia that travel in the family, but there are other cases that are sporadic, caused by environmental exposures through your life. And those are being really well defined.
And getting back to your point, Tim, about, you know, cancer is complex, but if we take dementia, which is also complex in its own way, but one that we're all concerned about and now seeing parents and older people really coming to an earlier diagnosis of it, is that anything that you can do from a lifestyle perspective, because we have changed. I did a podcast about bowel cancer with the Jodie Lee Foundation. We're talking about the fact that younger people are now getting it because of their lifestyle changes, sitting down, sedentary, less fibre.
Less exercise. Mm. Yeah, for sure. So what can we do? We know for dementia, there's been a couple of interesting developments in the past few years. So we know that exposures through your whole life, even from when you're a child, contribute to your risk of dementia. So how much education you receive as a child has an impact. We know choices in midlife, so midlife obesity contributes to your risk of dementia later in life. But one of the cooler things that we've learned is that hearing loss can contribute to dementia, and that risk can be abrogated or minimized rather by use of hearing aids. So there are absolutely lifestyle interventions and things that you can do to look after yourself to reduce the risk of dementia.
Can I ask you a bit of a left field question?
Mm.
When we look at the beauty industry, they are working very hard to find ways to keep people young.
Yes, absolutely.
To stop aging.
Yeah.
So I'm very interested if there's ever any crossover or any look at what that industry is doing, talking about from a cellular level and some of the treatments that they do. It may all be, nothing to do with it, but I just thought I'd ask the question.
No, it's funny you say that. I was at a conference in Japan. So we go to conferences around the world to try and keep up with the field. And in Japan, there's a thriving cosmetic industry. And I was talking to people who wanted to develop and were developing creams to put on the skin to increase autophagy, to increase, I suppose, the youthful vigor of your skin. So, and they had some real science behind it as well. So I do know that people are looking into geroscience, into the science of aging, in a serious way to increase beauty or to maintain beauty.
Of course.
Yeah.
I'm talking today to Professor Tim Sargent about autophagy. He's a leading research scientist at SAMRI. Tim, all very interesting. What inspired you to focus your career on this field, on autophagy?
Yeah, so it's been a long journey. I was actually a postdoctoral researcher. So I got my PhD, and the career path, you then become what you would think of as a contract researcher. In the field, you call it postdocing, postdoc after your doctorate. And that was in the UK in Cambridge, and that was a lot of fun. I was working on class of diseases called lysosomal storage disorders. They're horrific diseases where that part of your cell that recycles material doesn't work properly, that part called the lysosome. And if that happens, then the children who have a mutation that causes that can die at the age of 2, 3, 4 years of age of horrific neurodegenerative disease and other kinds of disease. So I was studying that. I was brought out to Adelaide from the UK at the time by Professor John Hopwood, who was in that field, very prominent in that field. And he had a huge role to play in setting up SAMRI. And he said, come out here, researched the link between cell recycling, the lysosome in autophagy, and dementia, because it's a huge unmet need. You know, we need something in dementia. And I'd been here for a little bit, and we'd established links between autophagy or cell recycling and dementia. And I can remember sitting down with him in about 2018 and him kind of prodding me and saying, well, what's next? Come, we've established this link. And other people had too. What are we doing now? And I said, I guess it's time to work in humans. And we talked it through and we kept getting stuck at the point of, well, if we try and increase it in humans, how do we measure it? And there was nothing at the time. So that's what I've dedicated my lab to. So that kind of in a nutshell, the journey to now.
Well, it sounds to me that autophagy could not necessarily be the answer, but certainly be something to look at for many conditions.
Absolutely. And that's because it's a fundamental cell process. And I think that's what excites me about studying the biology of aging. There's a fundamental processes that underpin many different kinds of age-related disease. So in Australia, the biggest killer of people are age-related diseases. Heart disease is the biggest killer of people. Number two, I think, is dementia. Dementia is actually the biggest killer of Australian women. These diseases are underpinned by the same fundamental biology, by aging biology in the cell. So you're absolutely right. By studying those fundamental processes, you can hit on a number of different diseases.
And it makes sense, doesn't it, Tim? Because if you're saying we know that any disease that becomes a terminal condition, obviously you're ending your life earlier than what you would have an average human life.
Absolutely.
Therefore, that prevention, that aging better and healthier,
yeah,
it makes sense to focus on that.
It does. And there's a big gap in that we've increased our lifespans really well. We've been really good at doing that over the past 100 or so years. We've enjoyed a couple of decades of extra life. But what we haven't done so well is increased our health span. So we can be sick for, on average, about 10 years before we die from age-related diseases.
And you hear that all the time, don't you, from people once they get older, I've got this, I've got that.
Absolutely. And that's what we want to push out for as long as possible, is to increase health span or the amount of time you have on Earth in a healthy way.
Because there's no point aging if you're not living well.
No, nobody wants to live for longer if they mean that it's bedridden and, you know, people want healthier lives is what I'm trying to say. And that's a major deal. That's what we're trying to push for.
And it's wonderful that SAMRI is supporting this. Tim, just work us through the importance of SAMRI and how, look, our community centres have many people visiting and we never think about these things till something happens to a loved one.
Yeah.
What should people be thinking about SAMRI and the work that it does, and how competitive is it to get grants?
So SAMRI does wonderful work, and as I said before, it has a broad program of work. In my theme, which is the lifelong health theme, we've got people studying pain, dementia, Parkinson's disease, heart disease. So SAMRI is at the forefront of studying the biggest health problems for Australians. Unfortunately, it is challenging to get research funding. So I'll give you an example. My main source of external revenue funding has been from the NHMRC and its ideas grant scheme. So an ideas grant is when you write your best scientific idea and try to get money for it, and that has funded the work that we've done in part. The success rate for that scheme is roughly 10%. So it takes several months to get together a competitive application. It involves a team of scientists from across several different groups, and 90% of those applications aren't funded. And a lot of them are very, very good. So a lot of excellent science in Australia is not funded. I don't think the public know or really understand the scale of this issue about how much great science there is and how much of it goes unfunded.
By the wayside.
I know of scientists who have lost jobs through lack of funding. A lot of great Aussie scientists out of work. So I think it's something that could be pushed more with politicians. They need to know that people, and I know that people do value this, but maybe hear it a bit more and push
which
for more
is exactly
funding.
What this podcast is about as well, is to share that news and the work that's happening. And would it be true to say then, Tim, that by working in an environment like SAMRI, where you've got other world-class scientists working, is really helpful?
Oh, absolutely. Just those conversations and other abilities that can be pulled in are invaluable. So just to give you an example, I'm a cell biologist, and so my trade is looking in the minute mechanisms of how cells work. So that's why I work on aging at a cellular level. What enabled me to get into human research is working with someone called Professor Leonie Heilbronn. She ran human studies. She's a wonderful nutrition scientist. And it was her that opened the door for me to be able to work in humans and to perform human studies. So without that collaboration, without getting different kinds of scientists together, that would never have happened. I would be kind of still studying cells, which is good, and we need that kind of research. But we also need to try and pull this into human beings, and that's what SAMRI enables.
Well, that's fantastic. You're able to do that, and a testimony to the importance of SAMRI and the value of the work. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. great story, and I'm sure everyone will be listening with interest and looking into their lifestyles. Thank you, Tim.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Cheers.
On behalf of all the Community Centres SA teams, thanks for listening. Feel free to get in touch with us at communitycentressa.asn.au. We'll be back next week. But wherever you are, at home, with your work and in your daily life, we hope that we have planted a seed to enable ongoing community conversations.
Community Conversations. For more information, check out communitycentressa.asn.au.